Tango Tango Papa 1962, April 21st, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Wheatley, Arkansas. So, it's been, I don't know, I guess quite a few days since the last podcast. So, I've been out to California, and then I was in Washington, up in the corner, up Bellingham. Picked a load up there, then ended up, that load went to Hutchinson, Kansas, delivered the load to Hutchinson, Kansas, and then they had me pick a load up at, can't think of the name of the little town down in western Oklahoma along Interstate 40. It's right on the Clinton, Oklahoma, somewhere around Clinton or one of those towns out by there. It's way out in western Oklahoma, about I think Elk City. That's where it was, Elk City. Elk City, Oklahoma. It's exit 47 along Interstate 40. And then that load I delivered yesterday evening to South Haven, Mississippi, which that's Memphis, Tennessee suburb. Memphis sort of spills over the state line into northern Mississippi. And so you have a bunch of Memphis suburbs that are to the south that are in northern Mississippi, because Memphis itself, the city limits go right up, you know, it's in the corner. Kind of in the corner of the state, and so it borders on the south. The Memphis city limits go right up to the Mississippi Tennessee state line. So then the city continues into northern Mississippi, or the urban area does. So anyway, delivered that, and today they had me pick a trailer up, drop a trailer and pick another one up, empty trailers. I dropped a reefer trailer and picked up a van trailer, dry van trailer, at Bahalia, Mississippi, which is another suburb around Memphis. And then went to Jackson, Tennessee, which is east of Memphis, and loaded a load there. That load delivers to Fort Smith, Arkansas, and then after that'll be tomorrow being Friday, and then after that I get to go home for a few days. So kind of looking forward to that. I've been extremely busy right now. One of the reasons I stopped here at Wheatley, Arkansas, is that I was beginning to run, I was close to running out of hours on the 70 hours. So I've been staying pretty busy. I had, maybe an hour and 15 minutes that I could have driven farther. But I decided I would just go ahead and stop here, might as well stop here, and then take a break here. And then once, after midnight, then I can, I get 9 hours, so then I'll have plenty of time to get on over to Fort Smith, and then it's about, 40 to 45, from where I'm going to be delivering it, it's probably 45 and 50 miles, so I'm at 45, something like that. And then I'll be, as I say, I'll be off for a few days. So, I have a voice file that Joel sent me. I guess it's been several days ago he sent this. He sent this voice file, and so I've Haven't I listened to the first part of it to make sure it was playing okay. The recording was playing, or, you know, the Voxer was playing okay, and it was. And so we're going to be listening to this together, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be doing a stop-start on it. By the way, before I play Joel's voice file, I back on March the 31st, Tesla Motors introduced, they had a kind of a introduction of the Model 3, the Tesla Model 3. And I've been aware, kind of aware of Tesla. Of course, Tesla is the famous battery car maker, or electric car maker. Runs on a, you know, the lithium ion, great big lithium ion battery. They introduced this Model 3, and so I ended up watching the video, the introduction video. And then since then I've been watching tons of videos on YouTube from Tesla owners, Tesla, there's probably the most the owners have the model, the Tesla Model 3. Now there's this Model X, and then Tesla Model S, and then Tesla Model X is the SUV that's based on the S chassis. And then the new vehicle that they revealed on March the 31st was the Model 3. And so up at this point, almost 400,000 people have put up $1,000. It's refundable, but they put up $1,000 to kind of secure their place in line to order the Model 3 as it, you know, kind of comes off the production line. Now, and as I say, I've been watching all these videos, and I have to admit, I'm really intrigued. It's been a long time since I've been this intrigued by a car. I remember when I was a teenager, and then in my probably early 20s, but especially when I was kind of late teens, I would buy the car magazines on the magazine, you know, on the newsstand, and I think at some point I actually subscribed to, I'm not sure, maybe Car and Driver magazine like that. And so I would read the reviews, and I was kind of interested in cars to a certain extent. And, of course, since then, not so much. But this is the first car that I've been intrigued with, or at least a car company that I've been intrigued with for a long time. So, would I buy a Model 3? I might. But I can tell you this much, I'm not going to put down $1,000. What I'm more willing to do is wait and see what happens. Because it's going to be at least probably the end of 2017, or the end of next year, which is over a year and a half away, before Tesla is able to start even probably making delivery on these cars, because I think there's still some engineering that they need to do. The cars, the exterior looked like it was pretty well finished. I think there's some tweaks they need to make to the interior, and maybe some tweaks they need to make to the design overall. But it takes a while to set up mass production, no doubt about it. So, but I think it's going to be it's a very interesting vehicle. And from the YouTube videos that I've watched, even though these cars, like the Model S and especially the Model X, has got especially software glitches, and they've got various kind of sensor problems and what have you. The Model S itself and the X, if you watch the videos of the people that have made the videos, most of the people that have bought Tesla vehicles are just absolutely as happy as can be with them. And I think part of it is the fact that they're sort of over the top as far as vehicles go. They sort of blow away any gasoline powered car or any gasoline powered vehicle as far as the way the things work, the way they handle, because you've got an extreme, I think one of the big things is the extremely low center of gravity, because the battery is basically, that great big battery is flat, and it sort of makes up the floor of the vehicle. And you know, the thing's big, and I think they weigh probably 1,300 pounds, depending on the battery size. They're flat, they're about 4 inches thick, and they make up they're underneath the floor of the vehicle. And so these vehicles, these Tesla vehicles, are able to handle very good because they don't have a very low center of gravity, so they end up handling much better than a typical vehicle that's more that has a traditional gasoline powered engine that's kind of mounted up higher. It's very heavy, mounted up usually up in the front of the car, and you end up with a higher center of gravity, and that obviously ends up affecting the handling quite a bit. Well, it's like this truck that I drive has a very high center of gravity, you know, so the truck is way taller than it is wide. You know, it's 13 foot 6 tall and about 8.5 feet wide. And so trucks typically have a fairly high center of gravity. So really, if you're, you know, a truck driver, you really got to take that into account, that you've got that really high center of gravity. So therefore, they're, you got to be careful going around corners and what have you, because you can flip them over. So much easier than even a traditional automobile. So anyway, would I order one of those? Maybe in let's say 4 years, 5 years, if Tesla's still in business, if Tesla's able to deliver the orders, you know, and after the thing's been in production for a while, then they can begin to tweak the, you know, because inevitably there's going to be some bugs with any vehicle, especially new vehicle. There's always bugs starting out, so you don't really want to be one of the first people to get one. After the thing's been in production for a long time, those are the better models to get, because those have the least problems, typically. So, and that's true with any vehicle, whether it's a car or a truck or whatever. And it's generally true with any kind of mass production. You don't want to get the first units. You want to wait until the thing's been around for a while. Maybe thousands and thousands of whatever it is that have been manufactured, and then you can buy one. So I'm just gonna, in the meantime, I'm just gonna hold off and see what happens. I'm not in any hurry. Eventually I'm gonna have to replace my pickup, probably, because the thing has it's a 98 model. It's 2016. It's 18 years old. I've got 120-something thousand miles on it, and so, you know, I could probably put another 100,000 on it, maybe. I don't know. Right now, while I'm working, I don't drive it all that much, but at some point, I will probably have to have another vehicle, let's face it. So, electric vehicle, maybe, that's possible. Because the Tesla has proved that you can build a really great vehicle that actually does have range, and they're finding that, you know, if you treat those batteries right, that you really don't have that much of a loss. Now, I don't know what happens after, let's say, 10 years, if what kind of shape the battery is going to be in, and then. But there are already Tesla Model S's that have over 100,000 miles on them and still have pretty, you know, close to the same range, if not the same range that they had before they put the 100,000 miles on them. So it's and then Tesla, of course, is they're building the so-called Gigafactory in Sparks, Nevada, outside of Reno, and that's going to help them drive down the cost of the batteries. So if they're, you know, they're able to do that, it maybe drive down the price of the electric, the batteries. That will help them push forward. And I think from watching the videos that I've watched, electric vehicles really are viable. It's not what you think it is. You know, it's not a golf cart that just is limited in speed and range. These Tesla vehicles are very, watch the videos of the people that own them, they're extremely impressive vehicles. So, you know, they have speed plus range. So, and then the chargers are starting to show up, especially Tesla has the superchargers, which enables the, you know, you use the supercharger and you can actually, you know, put maybe 15 to 30 minutes worth of charge in the battery and, you know, drive to the next one. So that's, you know, 15 minutes is getting comparable to how long it takes you to stop and get gas, because, you know, when you stop and get gas, you're going to be probably stopped for 15 to 30 minutes, kind of depending. So the same thing is, you know, the superchargers kind of make that possible. Tesla is installing these things all over the place, and then plus besides that, then if you're just driving, let's say you drive around your town or whatever with 200 miles plus of range, let's say you use some of that and then you drive home and you just plug your vehicle in, and by the time you're ready to go again, if you just keep plugging it in every time you come home, and maybe you plug it in at work, if you're in a situation where you can plug the vehicle in at work, you just keep the thing plugged in whenever you're not using it, and you never have to worry about recharging it, because it's always stays recharged. And they suggest you just leave the things plugged in. And another thing that they suggest is that in the settings, you know, the vehicle has settings, and you just never charge it to 100%. You're better off if you just charge it to the battery to about 90%, and then you know, because if you push it to the completely up to the 100%, then that has a kind of a negative impact on the battery. So if you're better off if you just charge it to roughly about 90%, and then that doesn't impact the battery as much. So it's very interesting. So anyway, the reason I'm telling you all this is because I'm interested enough in this. I'm not going to buy one anytime soon. When I'm, you know, got a wait and see attitude, but I'm interested enough at this point that I decided I would go ahead and make a new podcast. So it's online now. I made it last night, made the website, put it up last night. The name of the website is www.weekintesla.com. So weekintesla.com. And I've submitted the podcast. There's one episode so far. Made one 30-minute episode last night and put it up. So that's available right now, weekintesla.com. I submitted the podcast to iTunes, and I've also submitted it to the Google Play Store and Stitcher as well. Now, I don't know. There are plenty of podcast listing sites, and I don't know if they are compiling their own lists or if they're getting lists, because I think a lot of those just take lists from iTunes. So I'm not sure how that works exactly these days, and maybe at some point I can maybe at some point I can go around to the different podcast sites and submit the listing to them. But so in the meantime, that's up there, and I'm planning on doing that probably weekly, about 30 minutes, and it's going to be news basically that I find interesting about Tesla, battery operated vehicles, because, you know, Tesla's, you know, since they've had such, you know, 400,000 people have given Tesla a $1,000 deposit. It's refundable, but, you know, so some of those people will want their money back because they can't wait for whatever reason. And so, but it is refundable. But for 400,000 people, sight, you know, many of the people did it sight unseen before Tesla had even revealed what the vehicle looked like. Sight unseen for, I don't know, upwards of 100,000 people, and then more after the event, the reveal event. That's pretty amazing, and so that has, you can bet that's gotten the attention of the regular car makers, and so they're gonna, the electric vehicle, I think it's been demonstrated now that people want it. It's a desirable thing. It's not the the anathema that people have thought it was up until now, or up until Tesla came along anyway. That it's a really desirable product, and it's viable today. I think the electric vehicle, the time may have come. So, you know, and you can argue, I don't, and seeing any other problem, some of the people say, well, it's cleaner or whatever. Well, poop-dee-doo. I don't really care about environmental or global warming or what have you. I don't think we should deliberately pollute the air. I don't think we should, I think we should clean up after ourselves, absolutely. We should be clean in that way, but at the same time, I'm not worried about global warming. I think that's just a made-up thing as political agenda, if anything else. I don't believe that, I just don't believe in it. I'm sorry, I'm skeptical about it. Sorry. But that doesn't mean that I can't like the electric vehicle. And, and even if you still have to generate the electricity, you know, and you use coal to do it, or you use nuclear, or however you're generating your electricity, that still has some kind of, you know, still putting something in the atmosphere, if it's, you know, especially if it's coal or something, and that's going to put something into the atmosphere. But it takes it off of the roads, you know. So if you had a, let's say you had a Los Angeles that was mostly electric vehicles, or even a Denver, Colorado that was mostly electric vehicles, but especially Los Angeles, because Los Angeles is the poster child for smog, where, you know, California is naturally foggy. And then you throw in this, because of the L.A. Basin, you have however many millions of cars on the LA freeway system, Southern California freeway system, and you get this kind of smoke, dirty looking fog. They call it smog. And usually, unless the wind's blowing from the right way, it just sits there. And so the fog that's naturally there in California a lot of the time ends up looking really dirty, and you know, it can get really bad looking. And so if you imagine that, I can understand that if you live in a place like that, you'd probably benefit from electric vehicles. So but the environmental part of it doesn't really, that's not really my motivation. I think that, you know, if you watch these videos, the people that have these things, they are really impressed by, I think primarily, you know, some of them are impressed by the performance, because they do have really good performance that beats a lot of the gasoline engines in many respects. But the handling, because that low, you know, the extremely low center of gravity, and then because since you get rid of the great big engine in the front, you can, you have the front, you make a trunk up there, and Tesla calls that the frunk, F-R-U-N-K, making a play on the word for trunk, frunk. And then plus you have a trunk in the back. And so you've got more room. The floor is absolutely flat, so you've got more leg room, etc. And so it's just a, it's a kind of a very good way of sort of redesigning the car to take advantage of the extra space, because those electric motors just don't take up much room. So they come in a, you know, you can buy these things usually, you know, if it's got one electric motor, then it's real rear wheel drive. But you can also buy, if you want to pay extra, you can get the units that have two motors, one in the back and one in the front. And then you have all wheel drive, which I think if I got one living where I live up on top of that hill there in Northwest Arkansas, I would probably go for the all wheel drive version. Because that hill can, I don't, you know, my pickup is four-wheel drive. I don't need the four-wheel drive. I don't have to turn it on very often. But when I need it, boy, I really need it. Or I wouldn't even, you know, I'm not going to go anywhere or not make it home. And then sometimes, you know, the last time I had to use the four-wheel drive last winter, there was probably talked about it in the podcast, but there was a, you know, it was ice, and I was really beginning to wonder, even with the four-wheel drive, if I was going to make it up those hills, that hill. It was just, whew, boy, it was close, but I made it. So, anyway, the podcast is out there, and as I say, I'm planning on doing that weekly, you know, just kind of news and maybe some opinions here and there, and maybe, hopefully, I can get people to kind of engage with me. Because I think the Tesla, people are, it's really captured a lot of people's imaginations besides mine. And I think that this is probably a podcast topic that people will probably really engage with, and it, you know, they'll engage with it. Sounds like the Tesla, the people that own Tesla, sort of the Tesla owner community or the Tesla community, is really the people, you know, they're really, you know, kind of supportive of each other, and they're really friendly with each other. And it sort of reminds me of what podcasting was in the early days. So, but anyway, that's out there. So I'll continue to do this podcast, you know, about as often as I have been. But the other podcast, weekintesla.com, The Week in Tesla is what I basically the titled it. That is available. So be doing that about once a week. So anyway, without further ado, here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. Hope you had a happy birthday. I'm out doing some errands, unplanned errands. Get home after going to Sam's Club for a run of groceries and whatnot. And, of course, stupid smoke detectors start beeping, so there's no way I'm going to be able to sleep until I get those fixed, so. You know, just new batteries, of course. But so, but while I was doing that, while I'm doing my shopping, I was listening to you talk about the presidential election and how if Trump's not the candidate, then you're not going to vote for him. And I respect that. You know, you're not going to vote for any Republican, I should say. And I respect that because I'm not going to vote. Even if Trump is the candidate, I'm not going to vote for him. And while I'm not trying to convince you of anything, I am going to just kind of lay out a few things here just to think about. First, I will agree with you about Cruz. I am a Christian. I'm probably a little bit more conservative than you are. However, I look at it this way. Can't put a finger on what exactly I don't like about Cruz. I've never really liked them. It's obvious why I don't like Clinton or Sanders. Not a huge fan of socialism, not a huge fan of the liberal way of cramming things down people's throats, like homosexuality and so on and so forth, you know. And the funniest thing there is I think it's wrong, but I don't really have too much of a problem with the Supreme Court decision on the same-sex marriage. I really don't care, okay, because it doesn't really affect me. Not going to celebrate it, obviously, but I'm not going to sit there and say, woe is me, because I already know where I'm going. I'm pretty sure of it anyway. But the problem I have, especially with the liberal side, is that if you don't agree with them, you're a hater. If you don't agree with them, you hate them. Even though you don't really hate them, you just don't like what they stand for. But according to what they say, you hate them. Not a true statement by any sorts of means.
Okay, well, let me interrupt. First of all, I am noticing that there's plenty of people that like Trump, and then there's these people that sort of really like Cruz, and they really kind of support Cruz, and they're enamored with him. And I have yet to really figure out. I'm trying to really honestly trying to wrap my mind around their mindset. In their own minds, how do they perceive Cruz? And is it, you know, obviously some of them are really turned off by Trump, but, you know, because of the, you know, Trump does have a certain amount of hubris, and he knows that he does. I mean, he knows that he's got a certain amount of hubris, and he kind of makes fun of it to a certain extent. Almost, not quite in the same way, but almost the way Rush Limbaugh does, you know, shtick on the radio, you know, where he kind of brags on himself and so, you know, he's got a certain way of doing that. Trump does that in a little bit different way, but there's something, you know, that may be rubbing people, you know, certain people the wrong way, but the true Cruz believers, they are willing, you know, they say they're really conservative, and but yet they're sort of willing to overlook Cruz sort of cheating, and then Cruz himself is twisting it in his own head that he's really not cheating. It's just the rules, and he's just doing what politicians do. This is how the game is played. That's all he's doing. It's perfectly acceptable. Nothing wrong with stealing delegates, etc., etc. And I think most people have a sense of fair play that have a sense of fair play. Realize, hey, there's something not right about this. This really sticks in my craw. Now, and as I've said before, at one time I thought, well, you know, whoever the nominee is, I'll vote for. Whether, you know, and when I first heard Cruz, I thought, well, this guy really does. He's not very charming. He's got his face, you know, and you can't really blame him for the way he looks. But there's something about his face that, you know, some people, my mom thinks he's really just super handsome, but there's something about the way his face that I don't think he's that handsome, and I don't think he's that attractive. It's the way his face looks is unattractive to me. But just set that aside. Then he's got, you know, the Ted Cruz voice, which I'm not really that enamored with either. I don't like the way the guy sounds. But then beyond that, I could set that aside. I could set those two things aside. But then this behavior of, you know, trying to steal the delegates away, that's over the top. And then some of the other things that he said are really also over the top. So, I would really like to try to, without, and you know, it's probably going to be a tough thing to do, and it may be impossible, but I would like to find a true blue Cruz supporter, and without them getting emotional and getting mad, I would like to kind of get them to really explain what it is, if they could put it into words, what it is that they like about the guy. You know, because I don't want to make him mad. I don't want to be confrontational. I just want to know what's appealing about him. What is so appealing that they can kind of, you know, they've got their conservative values and they want the truth and all of the things that they say, and yet they're willing to cheer when the guy steals delegates. There's something's rotten in Denmark, as the saying goes. And I don't know where that, need to look that up and find that where that came from. But there's a saying, something is rotten in Denmark. So I'm sure that has an origination. But I don't know. I would like to be able to really kind of understand what's going on, because I, you know, like the Bernie and the, you know, the Democrats, I understand what motivates them. You know, I understand what motivates the Bernie supporters, especially because they, you know, they're sort of spoiled. A lot of them are just sort of spoiled. Parents spoiled them. Government took over. A lot of them are probably still living at home in the basement trolls. And, Bernie's promising all kinds of free things. Government is going to give you everything you want. Somebody else is going to pay for it. You know, and so that's the appeal of Bernie. That's the appeal of socialism to some people. And, you know, some people think that they shouldn't have to work, that it's fine to live out of the sweat of someone else's brow. Now, the other point that I wanted to make, you know, you're talking about, the people that say, well, if you don't agree with me, you're hating me somehow. And I can tell you where that comes from. You know, let's go back. This is an example I've given 1,000 times if I've given it once, but it's worth going over again and again. And, you know, just kind of, imagining it, you know, sort of reliving the, you know, anyway, lost the phrase there. Anyhow, just sort of, you know, sort of a thought experiment. So imagine that you're a woman and you've had an abortion. And maybe somebody's talked you into it, and you thought, well, you bought into the idea that, you know, the baby was, you know, you didn't want to have to, you know, be pushed into a shotgun marriage, and the child was unwanted. So it's better off, let's just kill it. It doesn't deserve to live because it's going to be unwanted, and because I'm going to be selfish, and me and the father are going to be selfish, and so the baby, let's just kill it. You know, it doesn't deserve a chance to live, because we couldn't keep our sexual parts apart, and so let's just, you know, abort it. Okay, buy into that argument. If the truth is known, and I think it is, if you talk to, you know, there are women that have had abortions that will admit this. Most of them, after they've had their baby murdered, they've killed their baby, their action has resulted in the death of one of their, you know, maybe it's their only child or a child. Those women are guilty. And so what do guilty people do? If you're really guilty, what do you do? Do you, you know, and your conscience is bothering you, what's the natural tendency for people to do? They find some way of getting, you know, distancing themselves between that guilt, distancing themselves away from the guilt. How do you do that? You find other people to agree with you that right, wrong is really right. That it's really, you know, it was really a good thing to kill that baby. It would have been an unwanted baby, and it would, you know, bring it into this horrible earth, this horrible world. You know, it's better that they're just dead. And they never had a chance to live. Better that it's that way. Is how they think. And so then they find other people that think that way. Well, that's not enough, though. The problem is, if you find somebody, you've done something wrong, and you know that you've, and when I say wrong, you have violated your own conscience. You have done something to violate your own conscience. And so you've got this internal conflict going on. You find someone else to help you distance yourself from that conflict, you know, kind of put that conflict out of your mind. That's not enough. Because maybe you get a little bit of relief. You think you're getting some relief because you got these other friends that agree with you that it was really good to kill the baby. It was really, actually, it was a noble thing to kill it. You get these other people to agree with you. The problem is that's not enough. And then you begin to think, well, it must be those people that think abortion is murder. Those people are hurting me. Those people are causing my conscience to really bother me. It's their fault. It's their fault. They're haters. You know, now, so that's a good example of this phenomena. And so the people that want the gay marriage, they've got the gay marriage now. Now that's not enough. Now, you know, because that's just not enough. So now they're driven, because remember, you got diminishing returns. They got to keep that conscience away, but the conscience keeps catching up with them. Even if they find people to agree with them that wrong is right and right is wrong, the conscience always catches up. And so then they've got to do something more. This drives them to do something more. Now they've got to start with the bathroom thing. You know, if a man decides that he's feeling like a woman today, well, by golly, he can go into the men's or into the women's room. You know, so now that's the new thing, because they're not happy, and they've still got this conscience that's bothering them. And so somehow it's someone else's fault that they have this guilty conscience, and they're running from this guilt. And that's really what they can't, maybe that you'd never get them to admit it, but that's what's going on. You want to wrap your mind around what's going on in their minds, what is driving them, that's what's driving them. I can give you another example that I realized just in the last couple of days. You see these people, the scientists, you know, that they've got the scientific method. And you can't doubt. How dare you doubt the scientific method? How dare you be skeptical that, you know, global warming, for example, which is kind of a religious thing for them. It's a sort of secular religion, secular fundamentalism. Secular fundamentalist religion. They are... You know, even though they have people, you know, boy, we have a consensus. What's a consensus? We all agree with each other. We all agree with each other that there's global warming and, you know, the earth is, you know, whatever. And it's all mankind's fault. Man is evil. It's mankind's fault, you know, so on and so forth. You're killing the trees or whatever. And so then we... But even though they've got people to agree with them, why they've got their concerns, their consensus, somehow if you listen to them talk amongst themselves, and there are podcasts where they do this, I can give you the names of podcasts where they do this, they kind of talk amongst themselves, you know, we should get rid of all religion, you know, because somehow how, you know, they can't live and let live, in other words, because the people that they know that people believe in God, they know that people doubt their so-called science. They're so, you know, because it's just, you know, they're all agreeing with each other and calling it science, basically, in many cases. They're somehow, it bothers them. And it's not enough because they're feeling guilty. You know, now maybe they're not killing babies. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. They tend to be the same people with the same attitudes. You know, they're either on the side of barbarianism or they're on the side of civilization. They think they're on the side of civilization because they see the world backwards, but they're actually on the side of barbarianism because it's barbaric to, you know, abortion is a barbaric practice. I'm sorry, but it is. But whereas you and I can live and let live, they can't, because they're running away from that guilty conscience. Even though they might not be able to put it into words, even though they might not be able to, they would deny all day long that they felt any kind of guilt whatsoever. But they're still running away from something. They're still trying, they have to try to drive a bigger wedge because that thing is catching up with them. The worst thing that could possibly happen would be if they were suddenly trapped somewhere without, you know, sort of like trapped in a solitary confinement type of situation. It would drive them, it would drive them insane, because there would be no way to run, nowhere to, you know, if they couldn't find the other people to agree with them. It would catch, you know, sooner or later, if you're left alone, conscience is going to catch up with you. You know, you can run and run and run. Sooner or later, it's going to, so you might as well start, you know, making friends with it now. You know, and that's why I have that meditation on my website at truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. There's about four files that I have hosted on there. And that'll teach you a very simple meditation technique. And it is absolutely worthwhile to learn to just be still, because there's a line in the Bible, be still and know that I'm God. Learn how to be still. It's a special way of being still and allowing whatever it is, whatever force there is that created us, that brought us into existence, that brought this, you know, the universe and human beings into existence, whatever that is still, it's right, it's behind reality. It's the very thing that led us to be what we are as creatures, as human beings. And it's always there, sort of pushing us with an identity. But in the case of human beings, we have a choice. A dog doesn't have a choice. A cow doesn't have a choice. It's just created. It's created the way it is, and it has its instincts, and that's what it is, and that's the way it has to live. Human beings are more than just intelligent apes. We have a choice. And we're able to rebel because of that choice. And so that's why, when people rebel, they always do the same things. You know, do you think that it's unique that we have this bathroom problem, you know, this bathroom identity crisis, you know, where the guys are trying want to pretend like they're women and get, you know, force everyone to accept them, you know, as women, you know, kind of play along with the fantasy, even though they're you know, they can whack off their genitals and what have you and pump themselves full of hormones to grow boobs, pardon the French, but they can't change their DNA. Their DNA is always male, sorry. It's always female, sorry. But it's always the men that want to go into the women's rooms. So we have this bathroom identity crisis. Well, So, anyway, that's not, and let's say that they get that pushed through and everybody just kind of says, okay, well, you know, go along to get along. You can do that, fine. They'll find something else. Then it's going to be, well, I want to be able to molest kids or something. You know, the child molesters will, then they'll take their part. You know, and then they want it, but it always has to be something, some indignant or some injustice that they see that they can sort of throw themselves into. It's someone else's fault that they're feeling guilty, and some, you know, they have to tear down the society further. And it takes us further towards, you know, the barbarism, you know, and there's only two choices. You got barbarism on one side and civilization on the other side. So that's what drives these people, is the fact it comes down to conscience, guilty conscience, because, you know, we can do wrong, we can rebel, we can do the wrong thing, no question about it. But, you know, you can kill your kid if you want to, but you're going to instantly be at odds with the force that brought you into existence. So you want, you know, that's why where that meditation comes in, because that meditation helps you to practice sitting still, of allowing that, you know, just stop running and allowing it to catch up with you. And it's very, very simple. It's incredibly simple. All we have to do is just be still and allow the force that created us, that brought us into existence, to catch up with us. And that's all. That's all. But you have to want that, and you have to be willing. You have to want it enough to be willing to do it, because it can feel like you're dying when you're sitting there, not running. It can feel like you're dying when that guilty conscience, because it's become guiltier and guiltier as you go along, it can feel like you're dying when that thing catches you, when you allow it to catch you. But that's what's driving these people. That's why they can't live and let live. It has to be their way, because they have to get rid of that conscience. And so it's never enough. It's a bottomless pit. Barbarism, the forces of barbarism are a bottomless pit. But, you know, we think we got this bathroom identity crisis. Do you think that's new? Guarantee you, if you were in Sodom and Gomorrah, same kind of things were going on. Not only were men, you know, kind of getting it on with each other, guarantee you there were people that were, you know, any kind of perversion, you know, they were feeling like, well, I'm being put upon, you know, these other people, these that are more innocent than I am, are sort of putting upon me. And it's their fault that I'm feeling bad. It's their fault that I'm unhappy. Even though they, you know, it was fine and dandy, they could do whatever they wanted to, you know, to be graphic about it, kind of screwing each other in the ass. Fine with that. Okay to do that in Sodom and Gomorrah. Guarantee you they were doing, you know, they had similar kind of things going on. Nothing ever changed. There is nothing new under the sun. That's right. That's another line out of the Bible. There is a line in the Bible. There is nothing new under the sun. The only thing that has changed, you know, of course, these people think, oh, we're modern and we're doing all these things and we're progressing. No, we're not. We're regressing. Because all these things have happened before, over and over again. Only thing that's improved is knowledge. The only thing that actually does improve is our knowledge. and technical knowledge, technology, it improves, and then that improves the ability to communicate is improved because of technological improvements. Things end up speeding up. You end up with, you know, whatever outcome there was going to be ends up happening much faster because of technology and improved communications. But socially, morally, same kind of things were going on. So, but anyway, that's what drives it. You know, they cannot live and let live. It's not possible for them to, even though they'll say, well, why can't you just live and let live? It's not possible for them to do it. They're hypocrites. And of course, they cannot see that either.
Now, I also don't like how the left continually wants to attack. You know, and I hear from my more liberal friends who say that you know, they'll call Trump a hater because of his strong policies on immigration. And to me, I'm like, well, last I checked, we have every right we want that we, you know, if there's any other country there is, to protect our borders, and that's really all we're doing. You know, I don't think that Trump hates an immigrant. I think he just wants them to enter the country legally. And I'm the same way. Now, I don't agree with a lot of other things on Trump. First off, I think Trump is an amoral person. I can forgive him for, you know, his multiple marriages and stuff like that. I can forgive. I am okay with that. Just as I'm okay with some of the things with Clinton. You know, there are certain things that I'm not hugely okay with. First off, how the whole Benghazi thing was handled.
Okay, now let me interrupt once again. I find it fascinating that you perceive Trump as an amoral person. Because I don't. Now, you know, that, I don't know. I just kind of find that fascinating. And that may be a clue as to why some people react so negatively to him. That may have something to do with it. But, you know, and he's had multiple marriages. You know, there's been plenty of people that have had multiple marriages. Now, does that, you know, the difference is, you know, let's say someone's had multiple marriages. That's one thing, but, you know, has he cheated on those wives? He gets along with all of the, you know, I guess with the ex-wives, he gets along with them just fine. From what I understand, the ex-wives, you know, he gets along with them fine. But I don't think he's never cheated. He's never committed adultery, at least while, he went ahead and got divorced and then remarried in another time. But I don't, you know, as far as I know, he's never cheated on his, you know, on any of his wives. But there's plenty of people that have had, that have made mistakes. You know, and marriage, you know, and women, and, you know, that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that a human being, if you're a human male or a female, but certainly a human male can make, is that the relationship with women, because that's basically the story of, you know, part of the story of Adam and Eve, is that Adam failed really to deal with Eve properly, because instead, you know, when the serpent approached Eve and said, you know, here's the fruit, you can be just like God, tree of knowledge, you know, eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge good and evil, then Eve offered the fruit to Adam, you know, and of course Adam was probably looking at Eve's boobs and her hips or whatever, and between her legs, and he thought, oh, well, how can I turn this down? I'm probably going to make her mad. because I want some of that. Pardon the graphic image there, but that's why he went ahead and then he partook of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and then when God confronted him later, he made an excuse and he said, "Well, the woman you gave me, she made me do it." You know, basically Eve made me do it, which it was an excuse. And that's worse than the sin. You know, the original sin being he disobeyed God. So that's, you know, but is Trump unrepentant? That's really kind of what it comes down to me. And he doesn't come across, and this may just be a difference in perception, Trump does not appear to me to be unrepentant. He comes across to me, and this is just, I'm going to be honest, he comes across as being genuine. He comes across to me as being fair. And I think he's a genuine person. He may not be perfect. He's certainly not perfect. But I do believe that the man is fair. You know, the reality TV show persona aside, because that's a reality TV show. Or the image that the news media has tried to create of him aside. I think that the man is genuine. I think he is fair with the people that he actually deals with. And there's plenty of people that have worked for him that have come out and basically said as much, that have worked for him for years and years. So, but I find it fascinating that you could perceive him as being amoral. So that may have something to do with the dichotomy between people that kind of liked Donald Trump versus especially the people that just really seem to like Ted Cruz and sort of they're willing to kind of overlook his unrepentant bad behavior, because that he's basically, Ted Cruz is demonstrating unrepentance, and not only is he saying, well, you know, not only that, but he's also saying, well, it's not even wrong. There's nothing wrong with stealing the votes. That's just part of the party process, and that's the way it works. Not a problem. Quit whining. You know, and he's unrepentant about it. Not only is he unrepentant, but he's refusing. He's twisting it in his mind that wrong is really right. And that's what I find repulsive about Ted Cruz. I find that really repulsive when people take something, and you can say, "Oh, it's just a small thing. Come on, it's just something small. You know, it's just a pin that you swiped out of the bank. That's not the end of the world. Get over it," is the attitude. Well, it's in the small things. That's where we lose our soul. Because it always starts out with something small, and then it grows, it snowballs from there. One thing leads to another. You know, an unrepentant attitude leads to worse things. So, but I find that interesting, and that may be, a little clue. Now, of course, you said you didn't particularly care for Ted Cruz either, but I'm really looking for clues to help me get my mind around not only what people, you know, why people are, certain people are enamored with Cruz that they're willing to kind of overlook his shortcomings and his unrepentant twisting of things. Not only that, but what do people not like about Donald Trump? That, you know, to the point where they think that he, you know, and I'm not, you can think whatever you want. Don't take me the wrong way. If you think that he is that he is amoral, that's fine. That doesn't bother me a bit because I have my own perception of him, and so. But I'm just really trying to wrap my mind around it, because it's very useful to be able to do that. So anyway, I could go on and on, but I'll just stop and we'll listen to the rest of the file.
And then for me, a bigger deal, which it just amazes me that the liberals could side with Hillary on the fact that she had a personal email server. And I'm like, wait a minute. What if a Republican did that? You'd be all up in arms. But since a Republican didn't do that, you know, you're okay with it. You know, and that's, you know, and it goes down to boiling to the fact that I'm not going to vote for Democrat or Republican in the presidential nominee race. You know, I will say who I voted for here in Ohio. I voted for John Kasich. I don't always agree with everything he says, but he's probably, for me, the least offensive of any of the Republicans. Even though I don't really like him either. But I can't vote for either the Republicans or the Democrats. And the thing is here, Tom, is if enough of us were like this, if there was enough people, you know, imagine what would happen if there was a valid third party candidate like a Ross Perot or a somebody who's very much like him in the Reform Party.
Okay, well, let me interrupt once again. Even if, you know, the reason I like Donald Trump, you know, and it's not just, the, you know, because he's got, you know, whatever he wants to strengthen the Second Amendment and reverse a lot of the stuff that Obama's done and kind of, you know, bring back the borders and impose tariffs on unfair trade. All of those things I can kind of agree with. You know, he wants to repeal Obamacare and then replace it with something else, and I don't, you know, not sure what he's going to replace it with. But at this point, that's a secondary. All of those things are kind of secondary to a large extent. The thing I like about Donald Trump is that the thing I find so attractive about him is that when he is attacked, he doesn't just, you know, kind of roll over and play dead. He knows how to handle the attackers, and it ends up backfiring on the attackers. And it's done that every time. They've attacked and attacked and attacked, and it's backfired every time on them. And it's just made him stronger. That is the thing that I really like about him. Because, you know, forget about the policy stuff for a second. That, just that alone, and him knowing how to stand his ground, that is a big deal. Because, just in and of itself, because, it, you know, the more that happens, people see that. And then people, you know, especially if he's president, people are going to begin to emulate that. And I want people to emulate that. I want, you know, instead of having the kowtowing, you know, the namby-pamby kowtowing husbands, you know, that yes, dear, no, dear, that type of thing, have somebody that knows how to stand up. Now, sometimes the roles are reversed, and, you know, that you have the reasonable woman and, you know, and the goofy husband, you know, so the roles can reverse. It's not necessarily just one way, but... Or, you know, but there's a myriad of different ways where we just keep giving in to the unreasonable people. We give in to them and give in to them and give in to them. And it's a bottomless pit, as I was describing before, because they're never going to be happy. They're always going to be unhappy. So you got to learn how to stand up to people without beating them into the ground, without, becoming a spousal abuse thing. You've got to learn how to stand up to unreasonableness. you know, resist not evil, but overcome it with good. Resent, change that word, resent not evil, but overcome it with good. And the good is, you know, Donald Trump is not perfect, but he's exemplifying how you stand up to people that are unreasonable, that are lying about you, that are trying to destroy you. He's standing up. And I guarantee you, if he becomes president, that's the effect I want to see. Because, you know, forget about the policy stuff. What I want to see happen is he is going to be he's already a shock to the system, and he's not even a president. He's not even a president. Imagine that he's president and he's got all this attention focused on him. You know, the effect, especially, you know, we live, you have to understand, we're living in an advanced state of depravity. America is probably, you know, we're probably in the fine, or if not there, we're close, final stages of depravity before collapse, before, you know, sort of a civilizational, you know, kind of a collapse back into barbarity. We're there. Something's got to happen, and a Ross Perot or a third party ain't going to cut it. You know, even if people would vote for a third party, it ain't going to cut it. You know, because there's going to have to be a shock to the system that's going to cause people to kind of turn from their wicked ways. Let's go back and get some of the language out of the Bible. Turn from their wicked ways. How are you going to do that? Are they just going to do it spontaneously? No, they're going to have to be shocked into it. You know, sometimes, I've said over and over again, you know, sometimes people find themselves in the gutter, literally or figuratively, and they're shocked that they're in the gutter. They shock, you know, they wake up in the gutter, and they're shocked. My God, how did I get in the gutter? You know, what did I do? And they start being honest with themselves because of the shock of the gutter, either a literal gutter or a figurative gutter. So shock is going to have to happen, and Donald Trump is shock treatment. Forget about the policies. So third party ain't going to cut it. You know, if we get a politician as usual, we're done. This is it. Because we are in the advanced stages of depravity. Politics doesn't fix that. There's got to be some sort of shock treatment. And I believe that Donald Trump is the shock treatment. So, but anyway, you know, again, I could go on and on about it, but that's the way I really see it. Donald Trump is the shock treatment. Here is our opportunity. He's come along at the right, you know, he's been able to come along at exactly the right time. And it's up to us to either, you know, we've got a choice. You know, and if the shock treatment is too much, well, we'll just, you know, go with what we've been doing. You know, go along to get along. And we're headed right into, you know, we've got the depravities already here. We're in the advanced stages of it. And, you know, you read your Bible and you look what happened to ancient Israel, or you study civilization after civilization, you know, the ancient Romans or Greeks or whatever, you study them, and the same damn thing happened. You know, they became depraved. And, you know, they got into the advanced stages of depravity, civilization gone, back into the dark ages of barbarianism. That's where we're headed. That's where, you know, and I don't know how long it's going to take to get there, but certainly the next generation is going to feel it. You know, I may not be around to see the worst of it. You know, the worst effects of the new dark age that we're just right on the precipice of it, you know, kind of, you know, with our hanging on by a toe, you know, hanging on by a toe or a heel, about to tip over the precipice into the new dark age of barbarity. you know, so we need a shock treatment. And that's, you know, it's not the policies of Trump. That's not what appeals. You know, it may appeal to some people, you know, they talk about policies or whatever, but what really appeals to me, and I think appeals to a lot of people, that, you know, the people that I've talked to, and the people that I've seen, you know, especially when I went to that Trump rally, people, I get the real sense that people want to see the shock treatment. They want to see what happens when you have someone like that that knows how to deal with bullies effectively without becoming, you know, and of course they accuse him of being the bully. Well, they're the bully, you know, because if you handle a bully right, someone's trying to push you into something. If you handle them, if you know how to handle them properly without resenting them, but being firm with them and handling them properly, you're holding a mirror up to them, and then they don't like it, and they'll accuse you of being the bully when they're the ones that are doing it. They've been used to getting their way. So I could keep going on and on and on. So but this podcast has to be coming to an end here pretty soon. So here's the rest of Joel's comment.
The reform party still kind of exists a little bit, but it's not necessarily as strong as it was when Ross was running for president. But and I don't 100% side with I believe the Libertarian candidate is Gary Johnson, and that's who I'm probably going to vote for the, you know, my decision's not really made up yet, but right now, if it was today, that's probably who I'd vote for. I don't really like him all that much either, but I don't detest him near as much as I detest either Republican or Democrat candidates, because, and probably my biggest problem is, even though I may believe with a lot of what Cruz agrees with, I may agree with some of what Trump agrees with, I may even agree with a little tiny bit of what Hillary would agree with, but what it all boils down to is both of these parties have done nothing but divide this country. Instead of trying to figure out ways that we can make everyone happy.
Okay, I need to interrupt once again. Why are we divided? Is it because, you know, you said that the parties did it somehow? Somehow the parties divided us. And I'm sure there have been, you know, there are people that do divide. They're taking advantage of something. They're taking advantage of a division that's already there, divisive tendency, agitate, agitate, agitate on both sides. Agitate, propagandize, it's called agitprop, A-G-A-I, how's it spelled? A-G-I-T-P-R-O-P, look that up, that's a term. Agitate and then propagandize. Gets people all worked up, and they become more externalized, and then you feed them the propaganda. And they internalize the propaganda. Agitprop. But in any case, why are people dividable? Why are they divisible? What's going on? We are in the advanced stages of depravity. This is what depravity does. There is no bringing people together that are depraved. You know, if you got half of the society is, you know, I'd say half of the society, half of the American society is, you know, people are pretty decent, still pretty decent. And then you got this other half that are just absolutely depraved to varying degrees. Now, how do you bring those people together? How do you bring that together? What part of evil do you compromise with? You know, can you tell me that? What part of evil can we compromise with? Is it okay to kill your baby? Is it, you know, because basically that's murder. Is it okay to steal? Socialism. Is it okay to, you know, rob, rape, and murder? Is that okay? Which part of this are we going to compromise with, and we're, so we can come together? The other side, you know, you can say, well, I'm going to live and let live. Well, the other side can't, as I explained before. They cannot. It's not possible for them to live and let live because they're guilty. They've got this thing that's driving, they're running away from this guilt. This thing that's, somehow it's in their mind, and they think that society programmed it into their mind, and they're going to do everything they can to stamp it out and get rid of it. Reprogram society, reprogram utopia. Somehow they're going to, you know, take over the minds of the, you know, the younger people. And, you know, make, you know, homosexuality is going to be fine, and gay marriage is fine, and, you know, whatever you want to do is fine. If there is no, you know, get rid of God. If there is no God, everything is permissible. But the problem is you create as many people as you possibly can that are already separated from their creator. You help separate them further at a younger age. By definition, you're creating criminals. By definition, you're creating suggestive people. So there is no coming together. You know, you're going to come together with a murderer. You're going to come together with a robber. You're going to come together with a rapist. Going to come together with a thief? Politics arises out of moral decay. Politics arises out of depravity. And finally, it just ends in a, you know, you end up in, with some sort of a civil war. You have the forces of barbarism at war with the forces of civilization. So there is no coming together. There is no Messiah, Ross Perot type that's going to come along or whoever and bring the things back together. You know, now I do agree that the Democrats and the Republicans have been... taking advantage of the depravity. That's what politics does. Politics arises out of depravity. Because if, you know, in the ideal world, if you had people that do the right thing automatically, then there would be no need for politics. Politics would, you know, there wouldn't be any need for it. But because there is, then politics, by definition, it arises out of depravity. So, you know, so by definition, then it ends up taking advantage of it. So it's not a surprise that they're dividing and they both decided that they really like controlling people, and let's keep these people under control. By what? By brainwashing them, by making them guilty, encouraging people to be as depraved as possible. You know, let's legalize marijuana. We'll legalize gay marriage. We're going to legalize, abortion. Legalize this, legalize that. It's really okay to do those things. But it's really not okay. Because at the end of the day, you engage in that behavior, you pay the price. You engage in that behavior, you're guilty. You engage in those behaviors, you are suggestible. You're all who sin are what? They're slaves. And that is absolutely true. So we're slaves. And you have slaves and the slave masters. You have bullies and the bullies and the cowards. Same thing. The bully is always going to take advantage of the people at kowtow, with the politicians being the bullies, basically. The bullies, you know, kind of people electing, you know, putting the bullies end up, you know, the worst people end up usually in charge of, especially government. So But there is no political solution to it. Politics is taking advantage of the problem. The real problem is the depravity. You know, again, we're in the advanced stages. And we probably, I mean, unless some miracle happens, we probably don't recover from this as a society. We probably, you know, if you just look at it from, you know, just a logical point of view, a historical point of view, we don't recover from this. Sodom and Gomorrah didn't recover. Ancient Rome didn't recover, etc., etc. There is no recovering from this if you look at it from a logical, you know, from an historical viewpoint. But that doesn't mean that it can't, because ancient Israel did. Ancient Israel was gone, and miracle of all miracles, it came back into existence in the 1940s. So it can recover. Will it? That's up in the air. But, you know, anyway, I could go on, and this podcast will never end, so let's go on.
And trust me, it's hard to make everyone happy, but instead of coming to the table and trying to work things out and to figure out how do you fix Obamacare, instead of cramming it down your throat, because you have the majority, you wind up with this kind of a situation where the country has never been further divided. You have people on the right who are afraid to stand up for what they believe in on the right, not so much because they're afraid of what they say, but more because they don't want to get excoriated, which that's what the left constantly does, you know, calling people haters because they disagree, which, you know, that's the thing that I don't get. So, and on the flip side of that, on the people on the far right, you know, a lot of them I find pretty disingenuous. They'll come up with this and that, and they'll say that Christ would approve of that, you know, or this is the right thing to do. And in reality, if you actually read the scriptures and research it a little bit, you find out God probably wouldn't have done that. Jesus would have not have done what he did the way that some of these folks are saying. You know, in the Bible, if you read the Bible, Jesus hung out with probably the worst people of that time, which, believe it or not, were tax collectors. and Christian, there's a certain sect of Christianity today that wouldn't be caught dead with sinners, which is the absolute opposite of what Christ did. You know, Christ loved people. Christ in the Bible, he hung out with the sinners. He didn't necessarily hang out with the Pharisees and Sadducees who proclaimed themselves to be righteous. You know, so in that same token, you know, I think it's probably one of the reasons why I don't like Ted. It's because I just don't feel like his arguments that he gives for Christianity and for the evangelicals are valid, are Christ-like, you know, and things of that nature, you know. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. And the left and the right, the Republicans and the Democrats, they're the ones that are just completely off the rails. And I remember for a time when I was in high school, they used to call the libertarian candidates the ones who were off the rails. kind of not the case anymore. But Oh, well, you know, we'll see what happens. I'll be okay no matter what happens, because largely whoever gets elected president doesn't really affect me all that much.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Again, you know, the politics that we've kind of devolved into, you know, the reason that you mentioned the left kind of pushing Obamacare down our throats. Well, the reason they did that is because they see that we're, you know, they know kind of that we're in the advanced stages of depravity. Of course, they would never put it this way. We're in the advanced stages of depravity, and they see an opportunity, a golden opportunity that Obama seized on. And the guy's brilliant in an evil way. He saw this golden opportunity to just cram this down our throats once and for all. We're going to have, you know, we're going to push this to, you know, towards a socialist utopia. And he's doing all these things as much as he possibly can in order to, kind of get all of the laws and the government in favor of the socialist / communist direction, you know, and take advantage of it. Take advantage of the opportunities. Take advantage of the depravity. Encourage more depravity. And so that's why they're driven to do it. You got to understand, they're not, you know, they can, people like to talk a good game about why they do what they do, but you have to understand when people are often driven to do what they do, and this includes politicians. They're driven to do what they do. They don't really have it. We like to think we have a choice in our behavior, but oftentimes we do. We're all who sin are slaves, and so there's these two forces that are sort of battling it out. You have good on one side and evil on the other, but we as human beings are making the choice. I've tried to come up with a, you know, because I've got this image in my mind of how this works. But if you can just imagine you have human beings, you know, you got human beings, you know, and on one side and apes on the other, okay? Now, the apes are what they are. They don't have a choice. You know, even though our human DNA is 95-98% exactly the same as, certain chimpanzee or whatever, almost close to being identical DNA, and yet on one side, the chimpanzee has no choice but to be what it is. It has its instincts. It's aware of its aware of its environment. It's really not aware of its own existence, and it doesn't have the ability to sin. Even if one chimpanzee kills the other one, he did not commit chimpanzee murder. You know, it's a chimpanzee. It's an animal. It has its instincts. Human beings and by the way, animals are never as mean to each other as human beings are. You know, if one animal eats the other, he just kills it and eats it. You know, he doesn't torture it before he eats it. That's a uniquely human feature. All this torture and chopping heads off and all that stuff. Uniquely human. You know, roasting. You know, there are, I can tell you all kinds of stories, you know, about African tribes, you know, roasting children of the opposing tribe and eating them in front of the restrained parents, you know, and gleefully laughing as the parents scream in agony. You can't do anything about it. Animals don't do that. So you have on the one side, the animals are what they are. You have the chimpanzee. But then this 98%, same creature, 98%, except there's this little, maybe 2 to 5% that's different in the DNA. Somehow, human beings got a choice. And it's more than just being more intelligent. Human beings got, somehow, there's a mysterious choice. And there's this force that could be an instinct that, you know, if we had instincts in the same way that chimpanzees had instincts, we would do the right thing, and we would always do the right thing, and we wouldn't have any choice about it. But we do have a choice. We have to want to, if you can imagine, you know, they talk about a light within. So, you know, and that sort of does work. So so if you imagine there's a light inside a human being, like a physical light, you know, and so the more the closer, you know, the more bright the light becomes, the more our behavior is affected by it. So the closer we are to the force that brought us into existence, if we allow that force, you know, it's a creative force, if we allow that to come through us, then but we have to want to, then by definition we end up doing the right thing. But if we see that as a guilty conscience, and then we try to run away and distance ourselves, where are we going to go? The only thing we can do is run, you know, try to become, you know, say, you know, believe that we're animals and become more barbaric. That's the only choice. You know, and then you find other groups of people that'll kind of support you, that wrong is really right, and right is really wrong. And there's a myriad, you can do that with literally anything, including the Bible and churches. That's the worst. But people do it constantly. That's why, you know, you think Christian America, why have we fallen? If Christianity, because it wasn't real Christianity, it was fake. It was fake and phony, ineffective, useless. You know, and anybody that stood up that was real is, you know, you're a weirdo, or you're drummed out. Or in the case of Jesus, they crucified him. Give us Barabbas, they said. Give us the murderer and the thief. That's the one we're more comfortable with. He doesn't make us feel guilty. He doesn't remind us what we've fallen away from. So if you can imagine, there's this force, it's God, but there's this force that is there that we, all of us, are sort of born separated from. We're close to it when we're born, but we're not, it's not the same thing as you know, we're really close to it, and then we're tempted largely by our environment, but we would do it anyway. We're tempted. The temptation to be God, to play God in our own minds is too great, and we fall to that temptation. So that's why we're here. That's why we're here. But so, in other words, another way of looking at it is, you know, if we're going to survive as human beings, individually or as nations, if we're going to survive as a civilization, if we're going to become civilized instead of just ravenous animals, then that behavior that would civilize us, that's there waiting for us, that we see as a guilty conscience, that civilizing behavior, you know, do we run away from it? Do we drive a wedge between ourselves and that civilized behavior, or that force that would civilize us? Because, you know, it makes us feel guilty. Or do we allow it to come through? And you have to want it. It's not something that's just going to, you know, kind of happen just at random. You have to really want it. So, anyway, thanks again, Joel. Really appreciate you sending that, because in that gave me a reason to do a longer podcast, because I have, you know, I really need feedback. I need something to respond to, because, you know, I just can't this can't be just a monologue that goes on. You know, so send me more feedback. If you want more podcasts, send me more feedback. So, anyhow, need to be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.